Hi, thanks for joining us today. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parents Guide. And today my guest on Hometown to Hollywood is Paul Becker. Paul is a Hollywood choreographer and director, and his credits are incredible. He's worked closely with everyone from Ariana Grande, Miley Cyrus, the Jonas Brothers, the Muppets, Michael Bublé, Ciara, and he's even directed and created for Kanye West. In the musical theater world, he staged numbers for Broadway legends like Ben Vereen, Kristen Chenoweth, and Neil Patrick Harris. Paul has choreographed over 200 film and TV projects like Twilight, Mirror Mirror, Sucker Punch, and Diary of a Wimpy Kid 1 through 3, and he's currently the series choreographer for a series of unfortunate events on Netflix, Once Upon a Time on ABC, CW's hit show Riverdale, and Deadpool 2. How do you do it, Paul?
Hi.
Paul recently was nominated for the World Choreography Award for his work with his mentor, director Kenny Ortega, as his choreography partner for Disney Channel's mega hit musical, Descendants. Paul, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
When did you start dancing?
I started dancing probably around 11 years old, and I was a self-taught dancer. I would watch movies, and I had some influence from my grandma. She was kind of an artist and a bit of a performer. So I had influence, but I never took lessons. And then I was encouraged by these two girls to take a hip hop class because they saw me like street dancing. I would just teach myself how to street dance, do hip hop on cardboard, and break dance. And I jumped into a dance class, and this is my very first dance class, and I was so nervous because back then, it wasn't really cool for boys to dance. And then that teacher saw me and kind of scooped me up because it was rare to find boys. So she was like, "I want you to." She basically gave me a free class. So I would take ballet class, jazz class, tap class, hip hop class. I would jump into everything, and it just engrossed my life to the point where every day after school I was taking class, maybe three classes a night, just training like an athlete. And I just wanted to learn.
I love that. You know, dance is athletic. If people don't always understand that, it's incredibly athletic. I've had the chance, you know, because of being sort of ringside seat with Dove now for so long, to see the extraordinary, you know, again, athleticism of the dancers that have been all around her, and it blows my mind. And what you said is also true. If you're a guy who's interested in dance, you have a huge advantage over all those girls because there's just so many fewer of you. You know, if you're good and you love it and you're passionate, you can get some great breaks.
Oh yeah, and I see that in my auditions all the time. It's tough. It's a lot tougher for girls. They in the industry for dance particularly, because there's so much competition. That's not to discourage anyone, but I really think it's important for female dancers that are wanting to pursue this to see that thing that's special, that makes them special, because, you know, a lot of times the reason why I say that is because a lot of times people ask me, like, you know, what can I do to stand out? What can I do to make people in the audition, the choreographer notice me or the director notice me so I can book that job? Well, I always feel like it's the moment you see what makes you special, other people are going to see it. No one else is going to recognize it until you recognize it, because you're not going to get hired because you're the best dancer in the room or you're the best actor in the room, the best anything in the room. You're going to get recognized. You're going to get hired for that one job because you're right for the role and you have something you recognize within yourself that is special. And you're in the world is ready to see it because you recognize it. With, you know, me growing up as a male dancer, I was surrounded by female dancers. I was literally the only one out of 40 dancers in the dance company, and out of the dance studio there was probably 300 or 400 students, and there was probably 3 boys.
Oh my gosh.
So it's really it's still like that. There's still not a lot of guys. There's still maybe out of one dance, out of 1,000 dancers, there's usually 15 guys.
That's incredible.
You know, it's, and it's, so opportunities for guys are much greater, and the opportunity for them succeeding if they have the drive is much greater, but they have to have the drive, and really there's so many elements to it that they need, but, drive is huge.
Drive is huge. And, you know, people don't talk about that enough in this industry in general, whether we're talking about dance or acting or singing or whatever. And I have seen my share of insanely talented people of any age. But talent's only the first piece. Talent needs to be a given, you know, to walk in the door. After that, it's like what often separates the people who really succeed from the ones who never really get anywhere is drive.
It's drive of, yeah, you have to want it bad. And I've seen a lot of people come and go because they just don't have the drive, and they don't, they wait for things to happen for them. And you can't wait. You have to make things happen for yourself, because no one else is going to invest in you like yourself. And you have to be creative with how you navigate, because the door is going to be shut in your face so many times. And that rejection is a stop sign, really. That rejection is just a temporary stop where you need to regroup. And I've been rejected hundreds of thousands of times as a dancer, as an actor, as a performer, as a choreographer even, and now as a director. And jobs don't always come your way, and the ones you really are hoping for don't always come your way. And I welcome rejection. I've learned and taught myself to welcome rejection. And the reason being is because it gives me clarity now. Once that door is shut in your face, you have a moment to stop, and you have a moment to think, and you have a moment to realize, okay, that wasn't meant for me, but what else is meant for me? Or how can I go around and navigate this differently?
Yes.
So you have time, you have a moment, you need to regroup. So I welcome rejection, and I hope that a lot of young entertainers can realize that, to start welcoming that and realize that it's not your fault that you didn't get the job. Well, sometimes it is.
I was going to say, unless it is.
Sometimes it is. However, there's many factors at play in this industry, and there's a lot of competition, and in any industry, and I would start looking at rejection differently.
I love that. And, you know, it bears note to anybody who's listening to this podcast that this is a guy who literally has just got the most extraordinary resume. I mean, the people you've worked with and the projects you've done, it's incredible. And you're still incredibly young, which is another thing. So for you to be so clear about rejection and the importance of it and the okayness of it is something that I really hope people take to heart.
Yeah.
So you fell in love with dance on your own, you studied it on your own for a long time, then you discovered the possibility of training, and you obviously went for it in a very, like, intentional way. What kind of training would you say you've had?
Oh, I jumped in everything. Every class known to man. I would take acting classes, I would take mime classes, juggling classes, private gymnastics classes. I kind of just wanted to learn everything. I didn't know if it was creating me to be a jack of all trades, master of none, but I just trusted that it would help me someday. And then there's so many opportunities out there for me to be self-taught. So I would encourage, I would go on YouTube and learn how to do lots of things. So, and I didn't know where any of this stuff was going. When I was first starting out choreographing, I had a short dance career. I was in movies like Chicago. Rob Marshall hired me, and then Rob referred me to Kathleen Marshall to do Music Man and her other movie, Once Upon a Mattress, and some. So I had a dance career, and I was working on film and TV as a dancer. And when I saw Rob Marshall and I saw Kathleen work, I wanted to go in that direction. Didn't know how. I knew it was going to happen. I just didn't know when, and I didn't know how. But I had the drive to figure it out. So I started to put together my demo reel, and I taught myself how to edit video, and I put together a demo reel and a press package and created a choreography sizzle reel for myself to figure out, you know, to really market myself. And so I mail that off to producers on all over Canada and the U.S. and just hope that, gee, maybe someone will call me. And I never got called. And then
how old were you when you did this?
I was around 19.
Okay. Everybody listen. And you don't have to wait until you're like, you know, older to do this stuff.
Yeah. I knew I wanted to choreograph. So, I mean, I was up against heavy hitters, you know, in the choreography world. So I didn't, you know, the film and television industry for choreography is tough to crack into because 1 in 100 films needs a choreographer. Every film needs a director. Every film needs an editor. But rarely do they need a choreographer. So the competition is tough. I didn't know this back then. I was blind. But I would send my stuff off anyways. And I would do creative things like... So before I get into the creative things, I got a random call from, so after mailing my packages off, I got a random phone call, from Matt Alvarez, who produces Ice Cube's films, and that he was doing Are We There Yet? And so I went in for a meeting, and I saw in the room other choreographers that had been hiring me throughout the year. So I was like, wow, okay, all right. These are all people I respect. And I got the job. I went in for a meeting, and I guess my youth helped me out. And I had a good meeting. I got the job, and that was my very first feature film, was Are We There Yet? With Ice Cube. And that led to Are We Done Yet? And that led to other... I used that film to propel me to get other work. And... the hustle wasn't over, you know. I would do creative things because I knew that I still needed to crack how to get in the door in different places. One story was I knew when Lionsgate Studios was in Vancouver, it started in Vancouver. I knew there was a film that was happening, a ballet movie produced by and directed by a guy named David Winkler, who produced the Creed movie and lots of great stuff. And I knew he was directing this, but I didn't know how to get to him, and I knew it was at Lionsgate. So I showed up to Lionsgate Studios with a FedEx envelope. Because I knew that everyone opens a FedEx envelope. If you get a FedEx envelope at your door, you're going to open it because it's important.
Oh my God.
If you get a manila envelope at a film studio, you're probably going to put it in a pile with all the other headshots and resumes.
Oh my God.
Because no actors are going to spend $40 for a FedEx envelope. So... I showed up there with a FedEx envelope with my demo reel inside and my press package. And I get to the security guard and I said, "Hi, I'm here to give this package to David Winkler." And he said, "Sorry, you're not on the list. I can't let you in." So I was like, "Come on, man. He's expecting me." And meanwhile, he was not expecting me. And so he's like, "All right, fine. Just, you have 5 minutes. Just go up there real quick." So I get up through the door. Now I'm walking up the stairs and I'm walking towards the front desk and I'm meeting the secretary and I'm like, now I have to get through the secretary. Jeez. Okay. So I walk up to the secretary and I said, "Hi." And I point to the left and I'm like, "Hi, I'm here to give this to David Winkler." And she's like, "Oh, do you want me to give it to him?" I'm like, no, it's fine. I can totally give it to him. It's no big deal. He's just down there. I didn't know where I was pointing, but in fact he was down there. And she's like, "Oh, okay. Just, actually, I called him by his first name. I said, "Hi, I'm here to give this to Dave." And so she's told me to crack his door open when he's off the phone. And so I went up to his office. I cracked the door open and he got off the phone. He looked at me. He didn't know who I was. But I walked in his office and I put my FedEx envelope on his desk. And I said, "Mr. Winkler, I'm here to, I'm a choreographer and I'd love to choreograph your film. I just want to give you my materials. I don't want to keep you. Have a nice day." And he stopped me. He said, "Wait, have a seat." He's like, "How'd you get in here?" And anyways, he ended up hiring me on the spot without even looking at my materials.
Oh my God! Because you demonstrated some serious drive.
Yeah. I think he said I have balls. So he gave me the he got me the, I got the job, and it was a pleasure working with him. But you have to do creative things like that. I've learned to that there's always a way. There's always a way to achieve your outcome.
I agree. You know, a lot of people, you know, if they're in a small town, they're not near like the incredible dance training that you can get, say, in LA or New York or whatever. They're like, I can't do it. It's not fair. It's not where I am. It's like, man, there's training everywhere. And as you say, there's YouTube everywhere. And you really can go very far with anything being self-taught, not just dance, but acting. I mean, Dove used to study. She still does. Study really fine performances by watching great films.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you learn from masters.
Yep.
You don't have to be stopped because there's not like a great acting school where you are or something. You know, mm-hmm. If you want it bad enough, you figure it out.
If you want it bad enough, definitely you will figure it out. And I always try to avoid the words "I'll try," because usually when someone says "I'll try," yeah, I'm going to try and do that this year, or I'm going to try and do that, it means you're not going to do it. Might as well just say I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, own it.
And, own it. And I always look at, you know, really, instead of asking yourself, like, what are the steps I need to do, is like, what do you want out of it? What is the outcome you want? And what specific outcome you want do you want?
Yeah, the more specific, then the more likely it will actually occur. It's very interesting how that works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can say, I want to lose weight this year. I'm going to lose weight this year, or I'm going to get in shape this year.
How about, I'm
going
to try and lose weight this year?
I'm
going
to try and lose weight this year. Yeah, exactly.
How vague and not committed can you be?
Yeah, yeah. So, I always, you can see it in someone's eyes when they're hungry and they really want that. And I teach all over, not often, but usually like maybe like 10 times a year I'll teach around the US and Canada. And I can see when that student is hungry for it. And I can tell which ones are going to, you can usually tell which ones are going to take that leap into being a professional based on their drive and their demeanor. And a lot of times it's not the most talented ones.
It's really interesting. And the world is filled with people who are not the most talented ones, but they are the most accomplished ones.
Mm-hmm.
And they get farther than people who are clearly more talented. And the more talented people are like, it's not fair. It's not fair. It's like, yeah, but guess who had more drive? Guess who worked harder for it? It gets you somewhere. It really does.
And guess who was easy to work with?
Oh, God, please talk about that, because that's huge, right?
Being easy to work with is huge, because this industry is very small. And, you know, people think because, you're on camera, people don't talk. People have this perception of, and I'm sure Dove's experiences with social media and everything, people talk about you as though you're not going to hear them, or you're not real. You're not a real thing.
Yeah.
And you're not a tangible being. And the same goes for, it goes for anything in the workplace. Like we're a workplace in Hollywood. It's a place of work. So it's just like being at the office. It's just like being at any place of work across the country. It's a place of work, and people talk. People talk, and the word gets around fast. If you're really difficult to work with, or if an incident happens at work, or if there's a fight that anything that happens, it's going to get around, and it's going to get around fast. And people are just not going to hire you, and you won't know when it's happening. You'll know when it's happening, but you won't expect it, because people are so. It's great to stay positive and be nice to everyone. I mean, I've been in situations where I've been treated horribly by people on set, or and whatnot. And when it came time for me to choose who I'd like to work with on this certain production, and their name came across my desk, I wasn't being vindictive, but I just didn't want to have drama on my set. So I wouldn't hire them.
Yeah,
just,
I mean,
it's a risk.
The stakes are too high on all of these projects. We're talking, in many cases, millions of dollars, years and years of work on the part of the people who are, like, bringing it into fruition. And a lot of, like, literally blood, sweat, and tears. And you don't, if you have a choice, hand over a piece of that to somebody that you absolutely expect to be difficult to work with or no fun or, you know what I mean? It's like you need it to be as smooth and easy and joyful as possible because it's your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love to be surrounded with talented people who I like being around that have supportive energy, you know?
Well, that's part of why, you know, it's not weird that some of the same people tend to cluster and work together repeatedly. Because if you find somebody that's a joy to work with, that you can completely count on when you're in the trenches, and let's be clear, this is really, really work. It is incredibly hard work. You want to work with those people again because you can trust them.
Yeah.
Trust is huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and the word gets around so fast because of the nature of this industry, because everything is so project-based and people flip from project to project to project to project, I was looking at your resume. I was like, oh, I know that person. Oh, I know that person. Oh, Dove's worked with that person. It's like, we're all so extra hyper-connected.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've worked with the same, like, Kristen Chenoweth. I've worked with on four different films now.
Right? Isn't that crazy?
And yeah. So it's just, it's crazy how you can repeatedly work with different people. I've worked with the same directors over and over, same producers over and over. I've had a lot of, I call it repeat business, because producers bring me back because I've delivered a product for them that was reliable, and quality. So, and I'm proud of that. Whenever I get a call again from a producer, I feel blessed because they're bringing me a job. This is work. This is in theory, these projects are, they look fun on my resume and they're very high profile. But I don't take this work for granted because I know what it's like to be, you know, rock bottom, and I know what it's like to be on top. And I know how fast it can change. And I mean, the story how I met Kenny Ortega, Kenny had no clue where I was in my life. I was rock bottom when I met Kenny Ortega. And I had bought this $1 million brownstone in Brooklyn. And I have a daughter, and she was just born pretty much. And I sold properties to buy this. I sold everything I had basically to buy this one brownstone in Brooklyn. And it had like four or five floors or whatever. And we started renovating the floors. And the goal was I was going to rent the floors out as apartments. And it was going to be set. It was going to bring an income to cover everything. And I had a big rock concert I was directing that was keeping me financially afloat for the next year or so. I was good, and I was excited about moving to New York. And then what happened was, mid-demolition of the house, the writer's strike happened, the SAG strike, and the Broadway strike happened all around the same time.
Oh, my God.
Then my rock concert got canceled, and I lost my job. And I had this huge resume, but zero money because it was all tied up in this house. I took this giant risk, and I didn't know what to do. And then what happened was the economy collapses and the stock market crashes and we were told we were predatory lended to and we're losing the house. The house is foreclosing. I was behind on every bill. I was behind on mortgage payments and the house was, I'm losing my house. I needed money, not for the bills at this point. I needed money for food because I was so broke. And, I needed to get a job, and no one was hiring a choreographer. No one was hiring anybody in the industry at this time. No one was hiring a dance teacher. I couldn't edit a demo reel. I couldn't do anything. So I was like, okay, I need money for food, to put food on the table. Literally, that was it. Because And anyways, I got a job at a restaurant, and day one I got fired.
Oh my God.
Because I was horrible. And
its own skill. People take it lightly, but it's not easy.
I grew up in the restaurant biz, but once I had a taste of being in the entertainment industry, I think day one I had a chip on my shoulder, and I was just down in the dumps for having to get a job that wasn't my passion. And so I got fired, and then I was like, okay, Paul, snap out of it. You got to pull it together because you need to get food on the table, seriously. So I got a job at FAO Schwartz Toy Store, letting kids on the big piano. And I remember one day, like, Kristen Chenoweth walks in. I hide. She didn't know I worked there. I hid.
And she knew you at this point.
Yeah, I had done, like, one or two movies with her, I think. And then Ice Cube walks in with the kids. I hide. Producers that I knew walked in. I just hid. I wasn't handling it well. And I also thought to myself, there goes my credibility. I thought that they would look at me differently if they saw me doing that. I didn't know how to handle it. And that's not the case. But looking back in hindsight, I just didn't know how to handle it well. I wasn't taking it well. Anyways, Kenny Ortega walks in, and I was like, okay, that's Kenny Ortega. And he was doing some High School Musical press of one of his sequels. And I went downstairs and I told my boss that I quit. And I started to change, and I changed into my civilian clothes out of my uniform. And I looked on the monitors, because there's security monitors down in the basement. And I saw where he was, and I went up to like the third floor where he was. And I introduced myself to him. I said, Mr. Ortega, my name is Paul Becker. I'm a choreographer. I'd love to work with you one day. I don't want to keep you. And he was like, he asked me some questions. He gave me his card. I gave him my card. And he told me to send him my materials. So I sent him my materials, and 2 weeks later, he calls me and he said, I saw your stuff, very talented. Do you like rock and roll? And I was like, do I? Yeah. And he's like, I want you to be my choreographer for this boy band I'm developing, and can you come to Seattle tomorrow? So I get to Seattle. I'm just like, yeah. So I get to Seattle, and the Jonas Brothers come on stage. And the next thing you know, I'm like on private jets with the Jonas Brothers, and then that led to other things with Kenny, and ultimately Descendants with Kenny. And I, about a year later, I said he was encouraging me to move to Los Angeles from New York, and I did that. And we were at dinner, and I said, Kenny, you know, you were like an angel to me. You saved me. He's like, what? What do you mean? And I told him this story, and he had no clue. I told him a year later that I'd worked there. And since then, he's been a mentor and a friend and a choreography partner and someone that I can rely on. But yeah, it just, while I was working there, every morning when I would take the subway, I was writing my script, and it was a script that I just wrote and directed and choreographed called Breaking Brooklyn that'll be out in theaters probably 2018.
That's so exciting, Paul. This is the most amazing story. What a story. Yeah. What an incredible story.
You never know, you know, I've realized, like, you're where you need to be. You know, wherever you're at in your life, you need to be there for a reason, and it's how you can learn from it. It doesn't mean you need to be stuck there for the rest of your life. I learned a lot. I met some great people working there, but I learned a lot about myself, and I learned a lot about people. That ultimately made me a better person for it. So,
yeah.
I'm happy that all happened in my life. I really am. I could have sulked and just went into deep depression, but I really pulled myself out of it. There was moments, there was dark times, definitely dark times, when I didn't really know what to do, but I had to snap out of it. And there, yeah, it's an example of that drive we were talking about. Is I knew it wasn't over yet.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, look, life hands us some really rough circumstances sometimes. And what defines us as people, I think, in many cases, is how we respond to that. Because we can't control what happens to us, but we can totally control how we respond to it. You know, I love that. What an inspiring story. That's incredible. Okay, so you wrote this movie, and you directed it and choreographed it. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, I wrote this movie when I was working at FAO Schwartz, and I literally was on the subway every morning, and I wrote it by hand, and then I put it in the computer, and then I collaborated with my writing partner Rory, who we continually write scripts to get today, and it was shelved for many years because I couldn't get it sold, and I knew it would happen one day, but I didn't put any more work into trying to pitch it to anybody, because it was really hard to get people to read scripts. It still is hard to get people to read scripts.
Well, in this town, people are inundated with scripts, so it's like...
Sure is, yeah. No. Yeah, and people want to do... A lot of times, they want to do their own passion projects, too, so you give them a script, they say they're going to read it, and they won't. And I don't fault them. I'm the same way. People give me scripts all the time to read, and it takes me a long time to read them. That being said, it was shelved for a long time, and a friend of a friend called me one day and said to me, don't you have a dance movie you were talking about? And I was like, yeah, it's kind of like a Billy Elliot vibe, but yeah, it's not ready to be seen. It's like 150 pages, and it shouldn't be read by anyone yet, because I haven't, you know what? It's been years since I've picked it up, and I don't remember what it's quite about anymore. And I kind of did remember, but, you know, it was been a long time. Anyways, I ended up sending it to her, and the next day she had a meeting for me. It was on a Wednesday. She had a meeting for me to meet these producers, and I just said, okay, I'm going to meet with them. So I met with them, and they greenlit it on the spot.
Oh, my God.
They said, we're going to shoot this movie in New York. You're going to direct it. It's going to be in November. That's in 4 months. Get ready. And so I was like, what? I thought they were full of crap.
Yeah.
And then about an hour later, I got a call, an official call from my agent saying, what did you just do?
We need to talk.
you just greenlit a movie. And I was like, what? So I realized that they weren't full of crap. And yeah, it usually doesn't happen that way in Hollywood, but... These producers wanted to make a... It was just the right recipe. They wanted to make a dance movie. Something they had on their slate fell through. They were scheduled to use a tax credit, a New York tax credit, by the end of the year, and they had to shoot something by the end of the year. And they wanted to do something within the demographic of my film, and it just... It worked out. I ended up calling up Lou Gossett Jr., and I got Lou Gossett Jr. He won the Academy Award for Officer and a Gentleman. So he's in the film, and another talented actor named Vondi Curtis Hall, and Nathan Kress, and Madeline Mantock, and a newcomer, Colin Critchley, who's starring in like Legends of the Hidden Temple now. So I got a lot of great actors, from the supporting actors to the lead actors. I got some great performances. It's more along the lines of a Billy Elliot feel during Christmas time. And, yeah, I'm excited for the world to see it. We'll see where it ends up. Right now, it's out of my hands because it's going through the sale. It's being sold right now. So we'll see who picks it up and where it ends up. You never know where it can end up in streaming or in a theater or on television. You never know. Especially these things with with independent filmmaking. You don't know where your film can be bought. So
that's exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And literally, I cannot wait to see this. I mean, now that I understand something about the background story, it's so inspiring. I know it's going to be great.
Thank you.
So, okay, everybody watch this. I'm going to tell you how to follow Paul at the end of this and follow him so that you can see it when it comes out, because he'll know more about that later. Well, speaking of projects like that, do you have much involvement in the casting process for film and TV projects where you're the choreographer? How does that work?
Well, being a choreographer for a television show or a movie, essentially, I run my own casting department. So really being a choreographer is not just about making up dance steps. For one, the word choreographer means dance writer. So if you are a true choreographer, you're creating physical dialogue that's going to move the story forward. And a lot of, I find myself having to educate producers a lot of times. I was on a call just last week with one of my shows that I'm working on, which will remain nameless, and a new producer was there, and it was her first year, and this is the second season of this particular show, and I said, okay, she said, the scene is, you know, a few of the actors are going to be singing and dancing, and I said, great. What I do ahead of time is I just get three dancers together. I call them a skeleton crew, and I prepare the choreography before we get to rehearsal so the actors have something to see and refer to in shadow, and the and you guys can sign off on the storyline and the work. And she's like, no, I think we just want you to go and work with the actors and give them a few moves.
Uh-oh.
And I said, well... I said, this is what we did last year. This is what I always do. She said, I'm sure you did. And I said, okay.
Oh,
I said, no. I said, if you want someone to give him a few moves, I suggest you call the local dance studio and find a dance instructor. I said, I'm a choreographer. I said, is the writer on the phone? And he said, yep. I said, hey, what did you write for this scene by chance? And he said, I wrote the girls sing and dance, and to a particular song. And I said, one sentence. He said, yes, the one sentence. I said, do you know what the word choreographer means by chance? And he's like, no, I don't actually. I said, it comes from Greek. It means dance or movement writer. And I said, so it's my job to turn that one sentence you wrote into 3 minutes of song and dance, of physical dialogue. Would you ever go to a rehearsal or go to shoot and have the actors sit there and watch you type every word because you don't have a script ready? He's like, no, that's absurd. I say, well, can you agree it's just as absurd for me to show up to rehearsal without my physical dialogue written? And they're like, oh, I never thought of it that way. So for one, it's the job of a choreographer to be a dance writer. And for two, it's a job of a choreographer to run their own casting department. Essentially, if we're doing a musical episode or a musical number in a big movie or whatnot, we're holding the auditions. We're hiring every dancer that's suitable. The casting director is usually just in charge of the actors. I was trying to think of a time where I've interacted with the casting directors on casting. Not often. Not often I've had to rely on casting directors. Maybe one time in my entire career.
So, for example, I'm going to bring up Descendants because it's, you know, such a huge franchise at this point, and a lot of the people who listen to this podcast are fans of the movie.
Right.
What did the casting process look like for dancers in Descendants?
Descendants? We did a lot of open calls at Descendants. So what we would do is I'd put out an open call notice for dancers to come and try out at this. We rented a big gym, and we taught the dancers the choreography, and they learned choreography, and they would have to perform the choreography for us, and then we'd basically choose the dancers that we'd want based on that audition. So it was up to the choreographers to decide who's going to make the cut, and it usually always is. The director usually just has faith in the choreographers that they're going to find the right people with the right look. Sometimes, very rarely, do I have to show headshots to directors to get approval on look. But usually I can just hire the dancers and show up with the dancers and rehearse them and go full force. But specifically for Descendants, we totally casted it as from the choreographer,
so,
Kenny and I.
So you mentioned look a second ago. Let's delve into that for a second, because it's part of the casting process, no matter what, to kind of get the right look. And I think there's a lot of confusion about that. I think a lot of people interpret that to mean that, you know, only certain, you know, standards of beauty can apply.
Right.
Like that if you aren't beautiful in the sort of standard way, that you don't have a shot at it. And in my experience, that couldn't be further from the truth.
When I look at when I say the right look for people to get hired, I'm always referring to type and ethnicity, and because I like to create scenes which are totally diverse in ethnicity, and we have big people, small people, short people, tall people, all different races, because I don't want it to be a festival of white faces on the screen. We've had too many years of that in movie making, and it's time to wake up and get in reality and hire more diversity. I'm a big advocate of that, and for Descendants, I think we showed that, and Kenny is a big advocate of that too. And he was adamant about and finding diversity, get people that are diverse.
Well, and making it look real. So I mean, and not just in terms of race, which is of course, you know, the first thing everybody's, you know, working to get right, but body types and every kind of type.
Yeah, because not everyone is, it's real. It's real life. Not everyone is going to be a toothpick. And that's not real life. And it's good to capture real life.
Yeah.
And when hiring, there's no, you know, with dance and acting, I mean, you're still storytelling. So when and getting hired, the director always has a specific vision in mind for a role, you know? And that could be for a certain look or whatnot. And, so they're going in with a mindset and something set in their brain of what they see for this role. So if you're not that, you're going to have to prove them wrong, and you're going to have to show them how talented you are and show them something different that they didn't think of. For example, when I was casting my movie and for actors, there are certain roles that I had my mindset on, and then certain actors came in the room or sent in a video audition and they changed my mind on us as to what type of person could do that role. And I'm a stern believer of you can change someone's mind.
I love that. I've seen so much of that myself, and so people need to have faith and not count themselves out before they even give it a shot, right? You know, they're not going to want me. It's like, well, how do you know? You know, maybe they don't know that they want you yet. You go in there and show them who you are in such a compelling way that they just have to go, oh, well, I'm going to rewrite this a little bit because this person's amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's exciting. What are some of the more challenging things about choreographing for TV or movie, and what are some of the best things?
Well, the best things about choreography for television or film is what I love about it is where I'm at right now. I get to, I like to tell the story. I like to create. I mean, it's really seeing something in your mind come to life. And I not only do choreography, like, it's not just about dance steps. It's about telling a story. What I mean about telling a story is if that scene is in a movie and it stands no purpose, like, I've read many scripts when I've gone into meetings and I say, guys, why are they dancing right now? Why are we dancing? Why are we breaking into dance? This has no there's no reason why we need to dance.
You're not furthering the story.
You're not furthering the storyline. If you're not furthering the storyline, there's no purpose. And it's the job of the choreographer to continually further the story. Otherwise, it doesn't belong in the script. So I always feel like the choreographer for film and television needs to be a filmmaker as well, because the camera is so important. When I approach film and television, and when I get a script in my hand, and I know that, I need to choreograph it, I first and foremost look for the story and look for story points that I need to move along, and I look at relationships between characters and how I need to have them interact during the number, and then I think of some concepts and ideas, and then I put. Once I have the concepts and ideas and kind of the pacing and I get the right song and edit the song to a place where it needs to hit the beats and stuff, Then I put it on its feet and I create my shots. And then once I create my shots, I decorate those shots with choreography. So I think of dance steps absolutely last. And I always feel like they're, I don't want to say they're an afterthought, but they really are last. And the dance steps have to have meaning too. They have to further the story along. They have to have, it's always better if they have underlying meaning to them. So that's my process when it comes to choreographing film and TV. I love it, but I love the fact that I get to, not a lot of choreographers get the opportunity or the freedom to set their shots with directors. A lot of times you're working with directors that have these shots set in mind, but what these directors don't realize, and I'm speaking to a lot of directors out there, is that their choreographer, if they're doing a musical number, is their best friend. If the more they collaborate with that choreographer, the better their product is going to be. And if you're a first-time director, a lot of them are getting, you know, or just kind of new or whatever. I've just worked with a lot of insecure directors that don't want my input. But what I say is if you change the shot, I have to change my choreography. That's how important the relation to choreography and in the camera work is. Just like when you change the angle of a stunt punch, when you're getting in a stunt fight, it's going to look whack. So my advice to new directors and even existing directors is have a good relationship with your choreographer and see what their vision is and let them create an edit of their work, of what they see, and then jam on your vision. That's my two cents to the directors out there.
That's good. Well, I'm sure that there's directors out there who are listening, and I'm sure there's a lot of future directors out there who are listening. So that's really cool. I'm learning so much in this interview. This is really fun. And then on top of all this work that you're doing all the time, you also teach master classes. You mentioned something about that earlier. Tell me about these. Who can take them? When do they happen? Yeah. Where do they happen? How does somebody take a master class with Paul Becker?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a website, pbmasterclass.com, and it's expanding into a lot of things, but basically there's a registration system on there. But right now, this year, I've just started it, and we've toured across Canada for now, and then we're moving into the U.S. next year. And it's a non-competitive environment. It's really, I fly out some top choreographers that can inspire everyone, and it's really a safe environment for people to dance, have fun, and who knows, we see new talent all the time, and I've been able to give opportunity to a lot of the dancers that come to the workshops because I see them, I'm like, oh my God, that person would be perfect for this role, and I'd hire them. I just hired like 15 dancers for Once Upon a Time last week that came to my Toronto workshop and my Vancouver workshop. So it's great to give opportunity to people in new cities and that weren't expecting it. Sometimes I feel like Oprah or Ellen giving opportunity like that.
You get a car.
Yeah.
You get a dance.
You get a job. You get a job. Yeah. And I mean, I love giving people work and giving people opportunity because I was that person, and you know what, and I want to be able to be tangible and my information to be able to get received by more people, and I these young dancers out there and performers out there always sit there and look at a casting director and they look at a choreographer and they look at a director and producers as though they're the key to their future. You hold the key to my future, and I just wanted them to know that they hold the key to their future. I was that kid one time looking at casting directors, looking at producers, thinking, man, if I could only just get in front of that person or if that person is going to be responsible for hiring me. If I don't get it, I'm going to, that's it. You know, that's my only shot. Well, it's not your only shot. You're going to have thousands of more shots and you have the ability to create these shots for yourself. And you hold the key to your future.
Oh, I love that, Paul. That just gives me chills. That makes me so happy. Age range. These pop-up, you're calling them pop-up workshops because they're happening in different cities. How old does somebody need to be interact and be part of that?
Eight years old to professional. Like, okay. Literally, last workshop, we had, like, dancers that were, like, 8 to, man, I think the oldest person, the last one was in, like, 40s. Like,
yeah.
It's just really all ages, and no one, the little kids are not dancing with the older kids and stuff like that, but, like, they're separated, but it's just a fun environment, and to sweat and dance and explore.
I love that. That's so exciting. What an opportunity. You've choreographed a huge range of projects, including quite a few for Disney and Nickelodeon. Do you have any advice for young dancers or actors who dance?
A lot of times if I look at my IMDb or whatever, and I say, well, I've done a lot of work, and I sometimes I have to remember. I was like, oh, wow. Oh, yeah, I worked on that. I forgot about that project. And it's easy to forget things, and it's always important to stay. You ever heard of the phrase, like, out of sight, out of mind, right? Well, like, there's so many talented people and dancers and performers that I've worked with in the past, and I'd love to work with them again, but life happens, and you get busy on other projects, and if they're not right in front of you sometimes, or not in the vicinity, on your social media, or on your, just pop up in an email, or just, if they're not on your radar, it'll pass by. That opportunity will pass by, and I'll forget. It's very easy. It happens. I'm sure it happens to me for people I don't keep in touch with anymore as well. So it's important to just stay on people's radar, and is a good way of doing that now through social media. I mean, social media does a lot of is crazy, but it's really necessary now in today's entertainment industry, which is kind of sad because a lot of people are getting hired just because of their followers and not because of their talent, and studios are being pressured to hire people because of their followers and stuff. So it's happening. It's a reality. So it's good to keep a good image on social media, because people are looking, and people are going to see if you're passed out and drunk and whatnot on social media, or doing stupid things on social media. People look. If you get hired for a job, or if you're being considered for a job, especially for Disney or whatever, they're going to look on your social media, and they're going to see things. And if there's something there you're not proud of, I would delete it.
And I think it bears saying, I think a lot of young people especially don't really think about this, but just because somebody's not following you doesn't mean they're not watching you. We can all stalk everybody. And just because, you know, somebody that you're worried about seeing what you're posting isn't following you doesn't mean they're not keeping an eye on you.
Yep.
And that really bears thinking about. Mm-hmm. You know, basically anything that anybody posts online anywhere, you should consider that you're posting it forever and always everywhere. Mm-hmm. 'Cause once it's up, it's up.
Yeah.
So yeah, social media staying on people's minds, that's really good.
I will say, like, everyone has every dancer, every performer has their own opportunity to nowadays to be your own entrepreneur and have your own channel. Have your own YouTube channel. Have your own way of expressing yourself. Have your own way of making your own show. Everyone has that, a phone and ability to do anything nowadays as far as filmmaking, and the tools are more available than they ever were. So if you really want it and really want to create your own empire, you can do it. And there's nothing that should stop you, because There's if you don't have Wi-Fi, you go to a Starbucks, you know. You
That's
can upload
right.
the video at Starbucks.
You Do can, not be stopped.
Yeah.
I love that. Any advice for young would-be choreographers? Because not every dancer is going to want to be, or, you know, it's going to be appropriate, but somewhat.
Well, there's a lot of choreographers out there that call themselves choreographers, but they, but a lot of them are dance teachers or dance, dance step makers. And my advice to those would be to really, really, because there's different avenues of choreography. There's live, there's theater, there's film, television.
There's commercial, which we didn't even bring up. You've done some amazing commercial work too.
Yeah. There's lots of avenues you can get into with choreography, and I would suggest to really, really hone in on your craft. If your dance career, like, focus on being an amazing dancer and working with amazing choreographers, because you're going to learn a lot from them. Ask questions. I would suggest also to study filmmaking. If you're going to be a film and television choreographer, study filmmaking. Become a filmmaker, because that's going to help your choreography. And that's going to help your choreography for film and TV. Study acting, because it's going to help you work with actors, because a lot of times I turn into an acting coach when it comes to choreographing various scenes in film and television. It's really handy to know how to talk with actors and how to and understand a scene. So, there's a lot of things you should be doing. Also, administrative stuff, too. There's a whole business end of it that is important, and you need to be able to know how to create budgets, how to use an Excel spreadsheet, how to create pitches and visual presentations. It's all necessary, because it's all part of coming into a meeting and pitching your ideas and selling yourself and marketing yourself. So there's a lot of elements at play if you really, really want to do it, and if you want to do it well and succeed at it and keep repeat business coming. And last but not least, be easy to work with and accommodating, because you're there to service their project. So you have to remember that.
That is great advice. I'm so happy you veered into the sort of business end of it. I know we didn't even go here, but you have, like any actor, like any writer or director who's a professional, you have an agent. You know, you have like the full slate of representation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You need a dance agent, a choreography agent. Right now I have an agent for my writing and directing, and then I have an agent for that I just got, because I'm missing being in front of the camera, that I just got for acting. And I have an agent for choreography.
And these are different agents.
These are all different agents. It's good to keep a good, relationship with your agent, but I'm not calling my agent every day and asking them for work, because I'm creating work for myself. I'm continually writing and developing my own projects, so I can have to pitch and create, because I'm not the one that waits for the phone to ring. And with those projects, I'm continually networking and meeting with other producers and people that I know that I want to collaborate with, or that may want to collaborate with me. So it's ongoing. The hustle's not over, but that's also the fun in it too, if you can find fun in that.
Ah, you have to, though. You should be doing something else.
Yeah.
Finally, any advice for parents who are hoping to help their kids succeed in the business, either as just outright dancers or actors who want to dance? Any advice for parents?
I think my biggest advice for parents, because I've seen a lot of stage moms a lot, and dads, and the biggest advice is when they get to that teenage years, those teenage years, is to stand back a bit from the managerial role, because it gets overwhelming when you're trying to hire them sometimes. And let the agents take over that position. It can be overwhelming if you have a parent, if you're in rehearsal and you have a parent continually just shadowing over the rehearsal process, or just kind of questioning everything. I just suggest, the more low-key you are, the more relaxed you are, and the easy you are as a parent to be around, the more the producers are going to want to hire your kid. Because there's been times, and I was just doing a big show on ABC and here in LA, and I was casting. I had to cast, I think, 30 dancers or whatever, and some kids came across the desk, and one of my assistants had said, "Oh, that mom is really hard to deal with. Just letting you know. There's been, and so word gets around about parents too, and that could cost your kid a job. It does cost your kid a job. I ended up hiring that girl, and the mom wasn't as bad as she was all wrapped up to be, but I didn't give her the energy to cause any problems. But word gets around, so I just suggest to be really easygoing to work with, and let your agent play hardball if you need to play hardball with other any issues on set.
That is great advice. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Paul. I learned so much. This is really a particularly great conversation. I'm really grateful that you took the time to
thank you
to talk to us.
Thanks for having me.
I want everybody to follow Paul and his work. So there are four different ways you can do that. You want to tell us what they are, Paul?
My website is BeckerCreations.com. And my masterclass, if you want to take a future masterclass, there'll be lots popping up this year. I think if I need to look at my dates,
but that's the plan. Anyway.
That's the plan. That's the hope. I hope to give back. PBMasterclass.com. My Twitter is ThePaulBecker, and my Instagram is ThePaulBecker1.
Ah.
And they didn't have the Paul Becker available for that one.
Got it.
Anyways, it was a pleasure.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you enjoy this podcast, subscribe. Go to BonnieJWallace.com and sign up on the podcast page to get exclusive, inspirational stories and insider info sent to your inbox every week. If you need help figuring out just how to navigate the career of a young actor, buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. And for one-on-one coaching that can save you literally thousands of dollars and months and years of wasted time, book an hour consultation with me over Skype or in LA. Just go to BonnieJWallace.com and click on the consultation page. For about the same price of an hour with an acting coach, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. Thanks. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.